Hi, I'm Mike Vinicevic. Welcome to Governance Bites. It's my pleasure today to host Kati Main. Welcome, Kati.
Thanks, Mark.
So Kati and I worked together at the Financial Markets Authority a number of years ago, and upon leaving, Kati set up a business called Rosewell Consulting, where she does a lot of work helping businesses in the financial services industry through their legal and compliance obligations, through their governance requirements and so forth. So a great deal of expertise. Thank you very much, Kati. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
The questions that I have for you, I'd like to ask you some questions particularly about risk and compliance. And my first question is, what is a board's role in managing risks to the organisation?
Absolutely. So a board has to be conscious about the life cycle of the business and I think really protecting it. So the risks, in my view, is anything that could kill the business. So the board has to work in the best interests of the company and they've got duties to do so. But often it gets carried away in revenue and things like that and doesn't think about what are the things that could prevent that from happening, but even worse, what are the things that could kill the business? And I think that's what we really learned coming out of the global financial crisis. Don't sweat the small stuff, but are you missing the big picture things that could actually kill your business?
Right. So what sorts of tools does a board use to get their head around what the risks are to the business, and how does that process work of understanding them and following them?
So there tends to be a bit of a process that follows both qualitative and quantitative analysis. So you're thinking about things like what's happening in their local environment, the economy, what's happening worldwide. There tends to be a risk universe of certain types of risks that are common to all businesses. So the four main ones, I guess, are your strategic risk, mm-hmm. then you've got your financial risk, your operational risk, and then maybe things like your regulatory risk. So if you start with something simple like three or four categories and then you unpick each category, it's quite easy to think about risk in the lens of strategically, what would kill our business if we weren't thinking about it? So at the moment, we're thinking about like disruptors to the industry and so on, different technology that are just coming in and replacing whole business models that could kill your business, right? Mm. So if that's not high on your risk radar, the other thing is things like operational risk. There's so much cyber issues in the world at the moment. So if you haven't got cybersecurity and data protection and client privacy and so on as one of your number one risks, you're undermining the longevity of your business, because those are the type of things that could kill your business if it came out in the market, reputational damage, but just the cost to remediate all those issues and the whole loss of your client confidence in you.
Right. So you're starting with kind of a brainstorming exercise of the things that could go wrong. And then as we've both got experience, you're then looking at, for each of those risks, how likely is it to occur? How much impact would it have on your business if it does happen? And then you're looking at your various mitigation strategies. How do you identify it when it comes up? How do you try and reduce the impact on your business if it does happen through things like insurance or a strategy or a plan of what to do if that sort of thing eventuates?
Absolutely correct. So I do a lot of control testing with businesses.
Yes.
So that's checking that their mitigations are in place and actually working. So what I normally do is I always start with a fresh set of, tell me what impacted your business the most over the last 3 months. What kept you awake at night, or what were your resources focused on? So in New Zealand, we have a lot of natural events. You know, we've had cyclones, we've had poor weather, we've had volcanoes erupt, and we have all sorts of things, you know, that impact our small country. So that for New Zealand would have been a key risk factor in the first half of the year here. So I'm talking to the board and management about, okay, so what impacted your business? What worked, what didn't work, you know, and what could have gone seriously wrong? And then when I go in and test the business, I'm looking at, did those controls work for them? Did they work? And then I go through a bit of a process to say, is the control in place?
Yes.
Often it's not. Mm. If it is, is it actually being used and is it working the way it was designed and intended? And if it is, then how effective is it? Is it actually doing its job? And the final one is it a cost-efficient way to control that risk?
Right.
And then I rate those four different areas. And once I've got this dashboard of green for all of them, then I'll lower the residual risk and say, it's now a lower risk for your business. Once it reaches low, business as usual activity should manage it, and I'll only come and test it periodically.
Right.
So what I'm doing is I'm constantly focusing on the higher, more significant risks, your reds and your oranges, as it were, you know, significant, catastrophic, moderate risks. If they eventuate, those are the ones that could kill your business.
Yeah.
So if you bring someone like me in to do the control testing, you want to be sure that those key controls are working effectively. And once we test them and make improvements on them until they reduce their risk profile, then we go, what are the current risks now that should replace those?
Right.
So you use your external partner as a valuable resource, but you don't get them to do the little stuff that the business itself should be responsible for.
Now, just in terms of the terminology that you use, you mentioned residual risk. So initially you've got your inherent risk, the risk that exists, and then you have your mitigation strategies to reduce or manage that risk, and then whatever's left is your residual risk, right?
Correct. And sometimes I think people rate the residual risk too quickly.
Yes.
You know, in my mind, it's you rate it at the inherent risk, like what is the real risk that's out there, until you've tested those controls and you've assured yourself they're working, then you can be confident that you know what your residual risk is. Otherwise, I think you're flying a bit blind.
Right. So off the back of this process of identifying these risks and rating them, you end up with your essentially your risk matrix to identify where the major risks. You'll have a risk register, so a table of these risks and what you're doing about them. So they're all in one place, and your board should be reviewing those risks periodically and keeping them in mind, and then raising the big questions for those ones that are quite high on the list to say, what are we doing about it? This is something that could really impact us. Have you, management team, got this under control? What are you doing? Is that the kind of board's role in the risk process?
In sort of the traditional way. Unfortunately, what we see in practice with a lot of businesses is it can be a bit of a set and forget. You know, yeah. We've done the risk register. Okay, we'll look at it once a year and tick it off.
Yeah, right.
I like to see more of a dynamic approach to risk management that you say to the board, what are your top 3 to 5 risks? They should know off the top of their head, these are the 3 ones, you know, or the 5 ones. If they can't, then there's a problem. They're not across the key risk. So I don't think it's the board's role to micromanage all those moderate and low risk. They should feel comfortable that management can do that. But the board should absolutely be concerned with, you know, what are the significant or, you know,
the extreme risks.
Exactly,
the high risks.
That if they're not being well managed, that's what could kill our business. So I'm always bringing it back to, what could ultimately kill your business?
Yes.
And that's where I see governance and the board's role is taking that higher strategic view of the business and letting management be the operational risk managers.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, absolutely. So would you say then that generally management would be the ones that would kind of produce the risk register, or is that something that management would do together with the board, or is it done by the audit and risk committee? Who tends to, in a corporate, put that tool together that the board can then utilise to understand their risks?
Yeah, so traditionally your most senior risk and compliance type manager would be the business owner that would look after it, make sure it's kept up to date, produce the reports on it to the board. In terms of reviewing your risk universe, I think that there's skill sets that both the directors and senior managers bring to the table. So with your board, you're looking at skills such as the breadth of business experience.
Yes.
You're looking at the breadth of different industries and businesses that independent directors bring. You're looking at the regulatory knowledge and understanding. And then the senior managers, they will bring more the what's specific to this
business,
what's specific to our industry, you know, what systems controls and what's our knowledge of the operational risks to our business. So I think there's a top-down, bottom-up approach that creates a very healthy dynamic in terms of risk management, because you've got the breadth of thinking that comes into it.
Right.
And also bringing an outside lens in as well in terms of what's the research out there. I tend to look at what's happening on the other side of the world.
Yes.
And every year, some of your big 4 audit firms, like some of your Deloitte's, PwC's and so on, they will write a threat level, like what the top 20 threats for 2023.
Yes.
And every year I pull those off, you know, in January and go, right, what's the outlook? And I compare to what happened the previous year. In general, they nailed the top five.
Yes.
You know, everything they talk about seems to come to pass. So it's worth looking into those things.
Right. So a good process for a board would potentially be once a year having a workshop together with management, maybe an external expert as well, looking at some of those consulting papers from the Big Four, for example, putting all of that into a mix and then coming out with the risks for that business, producing their risk register, evaluating where they're at, having some controls tested, identifying what their residual risks are, and then monitoring those during the year, management taking the moderate and low risks, and the board really having their head around the high and extreme risks.
Absolutely, perfect process. And definitely they will change. So at least on a quarterly basis, focus on what are those key risks, you know, and how's that changing with what's happening in the environment.
So it should be part of your board conversation.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Another topic, really, although it's related, what is compliance? This word, what is it?
Well, it's simple, really. So regulatory obligations are what you have to do by the law for your industry. Compliance is just making sure that you do that. So regulatory risk should be one of those top five or seven risks that every business has.
Mm-hmm.
And compliance is just the control, the mitigation. What do we put in place to make sure that, you know, that regulatory risk doesn't eventuate?
Right.
So really it's just integrated in your business, your processes, your procedures, how you do things, how you cheat things, the culture. It should just be intrinsic in the business. I think sometimes people get too focused on compliance being a specific activity in itself.
Yeah.
Whereas I like to see if it's interwoven into the business and the processes and people's thinking, then it will happen naturally as part of your business. It doesn't have to be too much of a separate activity.
It's not a compartment. Yeah,
exactly.
So, and you mentioned there in terms of the policies and the processes and so forth. So ultimately, you've got your obligations that you have to meet, whether they're regulatory or contractual or whatever they are. And then your policies are written to say, this is how we meet those obligations. And then you'll have, as part of your policies, a way of checking that everyone's following the policies. And compliance is the angel on your shoulder, just making sure that everyone's doing it, to keep everyone, particularly the directors who have all this liability, safe, to know that everyone in the business is doing the right things.
Correct. You know, back in our regulator days, we used to have the how do you know the question. You know, how do you know that this business is meeting those obligations? And that's where, as a board, fundamentally, it is your role to get that assurance. Is what are we checking? How do we know? What are we testing? What are we monitoring? How much confidence can we have in that? And that really does sit, you know, with the role of the board.
Right. And these are disciplines that have grown up through the corporate world over the last, you know, many, many years, really.
Yep.
And they are equally applicable to a not-for-profit world, right? It's just that sometimes the not-for-profit world's a little bit slower to catch up. And it's actually in many ways more risky because the people that are involved in not-for-profits are often volunteers. So they're taking on all this liability and not getting compensated for it other than by their passion, right?
Absolutely. Look, I think there's a lot of technical complexities with not-for-profit governance. So in terms of your ultimate stakeholders, you've got this fiduciary obligation to them. So that brings a different dynamic than a for-profit does, which tends to be more focused on the shareholders.
Making money. Yes.
Exactly. And as you say, you can often have a lot of volunteers as part of it. That again brings a complexity because you can't direct volunteers the way you can employees or contractors, right? So you've got to have a really good skill set of getting everyone's buy-in and valuing all this time and service that they're giving up for the organisation, but still addressing the risks, understanding your obligations, and ultimately understanding your purpose. Like, what are we here for? And it all comes back to what is the purpose. So if you've got a trustee or a society or anything, there'll be some governing document that says, this is what you're here to achieve, why you're here to exist, as you say, and that's ultimately governance, isn't it? Making sure that you're achieving those objectives for that, you know, organisation or for its members or for anyone that you're serving.
Yes, right. Now, compliance is a discipline, and risk management as well as a discipline, is something that's been around for a long time and happens globally. You know, there's the ISO standard, for example, for risk management. Is risk management as compliance unique in New Zealand, or are we just
definitely
kind of doing
not
what everyone else does?
You know, all countries have their own requirements.
Yes.
So if you're dealing with an organisation that operates in multiple jurisdictions, then obviously you've got to have local input on what are the local requirements. So you'll have a level of oversight which is worldwide, and then you'll have a level of what's specific to different jurisdictions.
Right.
But they should all marry up. So it's the same as having a large organisation, right, where you have different areas of the business in different locations. It's the same operating in different, you know, jurisdictions. But you would still have common underpinning themes, the way that we do things, our culture, our expectations and so on, and they really help support delivering that.
Right, so the rules of the game will be different from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but the disciplines of managing and understanding risk and the disciplines of compliance and being that angel on the shoulder and making sure that everyone's doing the right things fundamentally are the same globally.
Definitely.
The implementation thereof may differ because of cultural differences and so forth, but ultimately it's a standard discipline globally.
Yeah, and look, the more you can have consistency of practice, the easier it is to operate at scale and obviously keep the cost down. So getting consistent information means that you can slice and dice, get more meaningful information from the business, which all aids in decision making, you know, by the board.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Kati, thank you very much for your time and your expertise. Great conversation. And I'll look forward to seeing you next episode.
Thanks, Mark.